All right, lawyer talk off the record. A follow-up today on Mr. Mangione, or Mangione, Luigi, our favorite murder defendant up in New York. We did a whole show on this. Troy, our resident law clerk, who's actually out studying for the bar exam, so forgive his absence. We did a whole show on this because there was a search and seizure of Mangione at a, I believe it was a McDonald's out in Pennsylvania. So the facts are basically the somebody recognizes Mangione in the McDonald's. The description has been aired over the airwaves, and the police come and they conduct a detention and later search, a detention of Mangione and a search of his backpack. In that search, they find a bunch of evidence, including a loaded magazine, cell phone, passport, wallet, computer chip found during a computer chip, and I think like a what I'll call a manifesto of sorts, a log. Certainly evidence that was damaging to the defense in the case. So, you know, years ago, there was a case called Matt versus Ohio, and then a bunch of follow-ups. There was another one called Wong's Son. I can't remember the whole style of the case. But anyway, it says the Supreme Court actually sort of invented this notion that if the police violate your Fourth Amendment rights, that means that the government can't use the evidence obtained as a result of that Fourth Amendment violation against you in court. And then like all other rules of law, there are plenty of exceptions, and lots of the exceptions have actually swallowed up the exception to begin with, which gets us back to the rule, but there are exceptions to that. One of the exceptions is that the police can conduct a limited Terry type stop, again, by Terry. Ohio makes it big again. Terry versus Ohio says there can be a limited detention based on reasonable suspicion that there's criminal activity afoot. The reasonable suspicion in Mangione's situation would have been his matching the description of a murder suspect. And then when the closer it gets, it might even sort of tip over to probable cause for a full-blown arrest, which is what happens. And there was a second Fourth Amendment interaction in that case, and it had to do with the police searching Mangione's backpack or bag, duffel bag, whatever it was. And the question that the issue at hand, the lawyers for Mangione were saying, look, the police had no basis to search the contents of that bag that was zipped or closed without a search warrant. And if you look at the Fourth Amendment, you would say, well, look, it says you can't, there's no search and seizures without first obtaining a warrant with a detached magistrate. In other words, a judge would have to say, look, there's probable cause here to search that bag, and you can't search it without a warrant. All right, well, that's what it says. But the police searched it anyway, and the police were claiming, well, hold on, there's an exception to the search warrant requirement that says there if this bag is within the wingspan, the grasp of the suspect, then we should be able to search the contents of this bag for weapons because then it's officer safety. That makes sense. So there's been this sort of body of law that has emerged. I think the case in the United States Supreme Court is a case called Chimmel, maybe California versus Chimmel. I can't remember for sure. I need my law student here to tell me. But it says, look, the police can search closed containers in the wingspan of the suspect because it just may be that there's a weapon there and that would cause the suspect could get it. And the federal law has even sort of emerged far enough where it would say, even though the suspect is in cuffs, maybe face down in the dirt, and by all reasonable analysis, it would be almost impossible, if not impossible, for this guy to get access to the bag. We can still search it because maybe, just maybe, he could escape, get to the bag, get to a weapon, cause the police harm. So we're going to include that in the wingspan search. That's under the United States Constitution. All right. So with that backdrop, it gets sort of interesting. Because one, Mangione was caught in Pennsylvania, not New York. Two, there is a federal case pending. So there's federal charges, I believe, as well as state charges. So now we've got a milkshake of issues. Which law applies? Is it going to be Pennsylvania law or is it going to be New York law in the state court realm? And that can make a difference. And what if the federal Constitution might permit something that the state doesn't, or vice versa? Let's break it down. So the Fourth Amendment has its own body of law. I just talked about it with Chimmel, and it would say that it pushes that exception pretty far. But there are situations like take Ohio, where something, police conduct, might actually be permitted under the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution, but not under Ohio Constitution's equivalent. Section 1, Article 13, or whatever it would be, you would have, so the Ohio Constitution, and we can do that. So a state can make it more strict on the cops than the feds, but it can't be the other way around. The state can't permit more police conduct than the federal Fourth Amendment would otherwise permit. In other words, the state can't say, all right, this search doesn't violate the, even though the search violates the Fourth Amendment, it doesn't violate Ohio. That doesn't work. The Fourth Amendment is the supreme law of the land, and the Ohio law would have to, at some point, bow to that. Say, yeah, even though we don't agree, we have to follow the supreme law of the land in the United States Constitution. But the opposite can be true. So I just worked on a case recently where under the Fourth Amendment to the United, or it was actually, I think it was Fifth Amendment jurisprudence to the United States Constitution, it was, what the police did would have been okay. But in Ohio, it would not be. And I've got this coming up in another setting as well with a marijuana case, because you now under state law, we've got this legal marijuana here in Ohio, recreational, as you will, if you will, and in federal law, not quite yet. So look, can the police use the odor of marijuana as a basis to search for more evidence? And, you know, I would argue the government's going to argue yes, because it's still against the law under federal law. I'm going to say, yeah, but Ohio permits it. So even though the federal government or the Fourth Amendment might permit that kind of search, we're going to argue that the Ohio Constitution doesn't. Suppression would apply equally because you can suppress evidence that violates Ohio, even if it doesn't violate the Fourth Amendment. All right, back to Mangione. So I think what was going on here, one of the issues was whose law should the judge apply? Should the judge apply the Pennsylvania law or the New York law? And I think the prosecutor was banging the table saying, look, the search happened in Pennsylvania, and it was Pennsylvania cops or law enforcement. How can they possibly be held to a standard that New York promotes? And again, I think what was going on is maybe the search would have been permitted in Pennsylvania, but not so much in New York. Well, the judge says, look, the case is in New York. I don't care about any of that nonsense. I'm going to apply New York law, and I'm going to suppress the evidence. And then at the same time, people were saying, well, look, it still means that the feds can use the evidence in federal court. And people are asking me, well, how can possibly that be? Because that doesn't make any sense. Well, there's this dual sovereign doctrine, basically. So somebody can be prosecuted in both federal and state courts. This happens a lot, but it's more common than people think. I handled a murder case that had sort of a federal murder case. It wasn't quite charged as murder, but then my client later gets charged in state court with murder, and people are like, oh, how can that happen? Well, it can. We do our best to try to head that off, but sometimes it happens. I had a bank robbery case one time where the person was charged both in federal court and state court, same conduct, and you're thinking double jeopardy, but you can't because we've weaseled around all that nonsense with this dual sovereign doctrine. Anyway, the point I'm making here is that even if the evidence violated or the search violated whatever state constitution applied or some other for other reason in state court that the government can't use that evidence against Luigi, doesn't mean the feds can't use it in a federal prosecution if the search didn't violate the Fourth Amendment. So you can't, you have to sort of separate it out. And in the case I was talking about, say the Pennsylvania law is a little more strict than the federal law, but the federal law is going to permit it. So look, is it better for Luigi that the evidence got suppressed? I think it absolutely is. Does that mean that he's going to win the case? I don't know, but it certainly takes a lot of the ammunition away from the state of New York as it's prosecuting its murder case. I don't know what the remaining evidence is. Well, that remains to be seen, but whatever's happening in federal court, the evidence apparently still can be used there. So anyway, breaking down the Luigi decision, I think when we talked about it, I had the impression that there was an argument there, that the defense had a decent argument to throw some of this out. And we're going to talk about one more thing. I heard some commentators on this, and they were yelping about the exclusionary rule. The exclusionary rule is what I talked, Matt versus Ohio and Wong Sun, that says the government can't use evidence that it's seized unlawfully. And the commentator was saying, this is nonsense. It's a stupid rule. He didn't agree with it. And he may be right about all that, right? But whatever, it is the law. But it always gets me down this path because there are times when the U.S. Supreme Court has essentially invented law. They've invented constitutional law. One of those times is the exclusionary rule, because if you pull out your Constitution and you read all through it, all the amendments, all the articles, all the little provisions, everything in it, you're not going to find anything that says the exclusionary rule. You're not going to find anything, incidentally, that says the police have to read somebody their Miranda rights. You're not going to find there's other examples of this, but those are the big ones in criminal procedure. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that the court overstepped its bounds, got over its skis, and basically promulgated law from the bench and made it a constitutional violation if you don't read somebody their Miranda rights. It's a good argument. Now, there is this notion called super precedent. We've all agreed that this is the law, so it sort of is the law. I doubt it'll ever change. But there's a decent argument to say, look, it's time to get rid of it. It never should have happened, and let's get rid of it. I don't think that's going to happen. But it gets me down this path of thinking, what would have happened if we didn't have the exclusionary rule? Couple things. It may have been that Congress or state legislators would have passed a law congressionally, or they would have passed something in their General Assembly here in Ohio that says, if there's a constitutional violation, the government can't use the evidence, and they would have the same impact. Now, it might be different state by state, but that could have happened. The other thing that Justice Scalia, wrote a decision one time, says, look, the exclusionary rule is arcane. We don't need it anymore, or words to that effect. We can just sue the cops. And, you know, those in the show and the comments have often said that, yeah, that's like nothing because you never win, or there's no money, or it's too hard. They have immunity. But I think if the exclusionary rule didn't exist, I think that litigation probably would have gone a different direction, maybe more in favor of those who have had their constitutional rights violated. Maybe not. But it's always interesting to wonder what would have happened if we didn't have the exclusionary rule. We do. It's an academic exercise. I don't think it's going away in our lifetime anyway. But if you've got questions or thoughts about any of this, let us know. I know the Luigi case gets lots of it has drawn the ire of lots of people one way or another. But it is a murder case, and we'll follow it here on Lawyer Talk Off the Record on the air. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.